I'm Eric Warista, and welcome to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast. Noam Shore and I are excited to bring you this new podcast, giving you content direct from the point of view of two long-tenured season ticket holders. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoy the show, and we can't wait to hear from you. I'm Eric Warista.
This is Noam Shore.
And you're listening to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast. Well, Noam, it's been 3 weeks since the Revs' regular season ended. Has anything changed for you as you look back on the last year?
I don't know that anything has changed, except that I just feel more and more disappointed about the season. You know, it's interesting. We look back at our first episode, which was coming right after the close of the prior season, a magical season followed by a crushing loss to New York City FC. And we thought, wow, this is really setting the stage for an interesting story for the Revolution in 2022. And where do we end up with? We end up with another dud of a season. And you look at the other teams playing to full houses and soccer-specific stadiums and wild fan bases in LA, in Austin. And it's just a feeling of frustration.
Why would you say that?
Well, where are the Revs? They had so much promise and so much excitement building up. Bruce Arena coming in, and yes, they had a banner winning season in 2021, but it just fizzled. And we've talked about why, the injuries, the lost players, but here we are, back to another critical offseason. So there's no lack of intrigue. There's no lack of drama from this last season. But I'm just stuck back to where we were, a team that is struggling to find its way.
Right. It feels like deja vu all over again. It was such a bizarre season in so many different ways. And if you just look at it by a couple of different numbers, you really feel how fine a line it is between a successful season and an unsuccessful one. We've talked about points dropped from a winning position where the Revs led the league by a mile. And I don't know if they set a record, but I think they must have been close to one in that category. Carlos Heel led the league in key passes this year. He had 107. The guy who finished second in that category had 80. But he was only, tied for fourth in assists. So all these key passes, all the expected goals, they didn't go in. And you combine that with a team that gave up 12 penalty kicks in the second half of the season. Jordy Petrovic faced 12 penalty kicks in 21 games. And you can see how it just wasn't meant to be.
Yeah, that's an astounding statistic, the penalty kicks. And Heel having a strong year, but the play is never finishing or rarely finishing. And the Revolution leaving the pitch, having broken a record for the most points given up from a winning position.
Right.
I think it was something around 30 points. You win even half of those, they're easily in the playoffs.
When I watched the playoff games this weekend, what struck me was not just how excited the fans were that teams were in these competitive games. And most of the games were very close and competitive. I mean, this is about as exciting an MLS playoffs as I can remember. But a lot of the stadiums, just the energy in the stadium was so incredible that it actually took me back and reminded me of going to the World Cup in Germany in 2006 and being in that environment.
Oh, wow. How is that?
Well, I remember especially, it made me think of the U.S.-Italy game in Kaiserslautern. And the U.S. had gotten blown out in the opening game by the Czech Republic. I think they lost 3-0. And so this was do or die. This was against a team, one of the favorites to win the tournament. And just everyone had a shirt and a hat and a scarf and was just up for the game in an incredible way. When Italy came out for warmups, that one whole side of the stadium went completely nuts out of their mind. They were singing, they were cheering. When the U.S. came out of the locker room, they put Born in the USA on the speakers, and the whole crowd sang along. It felt like Madison Square Garden, you know, thousands of miles from home.
Right.
Just an incredible moment.
Yeah.
And it highlighted for me the problem with Gillette Stadium, which is even in a big playoff game, if you've got 30 or 40,000, it still feels spread out. It's an NFL architected stadium, meaning the sight lines are very much football sight lines, not soccer sight lines. And it feels sort of cavernous and empty, even when it's, you know, 2/3 full.
Yeah, I was just going to ask. So how does that make you feel about even well-attended Revolution games? Where the crowd can get a little noisy, and I'll never forget Tayshaun Buchanan's tying goal against NYC at the end of the game, at the playoff game last year, and just the our section, I mean, the whole stadium, I think, just erupted. And you know, it's a magical moment for any kind of sporting event to be a part of it there. But that is true. You know, the empty spacing there, upper decks that are empty. And you've got that inflatable shirt that's always a little bit sad there in tatters in the corner, dominating the environment as we've talked about all season. A World Cup experience, at least for the Revolution, it is not, even though the World Cup will be played there again shortly.
And I think this is true across sports, too. I mean, I think when you look at college basketball games that are played on campus versus ones that are played in larger downtown arenas, but where the student impact is more muted, that's what it feels like when the Revs play in Gillette, and just highlights the need for a soccer stadium that's in the city, somewhere near public transportation, ideally. You know, people can kind of walk to the game, and it's a totally different experience.
Well, that's another reason to talk about deja vu. Arena talked about the need if week or two ago about the need for having a soccer specific stadium to really take the team to the next level. Right. So with a 5-month off season in the works this year, it's a long time of really no news. And here's my other reason for feeling frustrated at the end of the season. It's some of the roster moves that have occurred since then, too. And mainly Emma Boateng not being re-signed. Arena did offer the possibility that he could come back, but he was one of my favorite players the last couple of years, the spark off the bench, always wondering why he didn't play more.
Soccer seemed easier when he was out there. Like,
yeah.
Get the ball, make a pass, go, one touch, two touch, go.
Things were happening when he was on the field.
Yeah.
So potentially gone. We have Kaptoum, who is one of my more favorite players on the team. I think showed some real promise. I think he's going to be leaving. Not sure if Martial is staying. We have...
But he'll be coming back from an injury.
Tajuri Shradi. Perhaps a career-ending injury, never even took the field. So the team has some work to do to come back next year. Altidore doesn't want to be here. We could see Petrovic leaving. There's already some rumors about that. De La Garza, I think, has left.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a potentially very different Revolution team next year. When I start sketching out who's back, I mean, here's a potential Revs lineup. You tell me what you think. And this is, I'm projecting some people leaving when I say this, but you could have Brad Knighton in goal, Farrell and Kessler in the middle, Bai and Ryan Spalding on the outside, if you assume that Jones makes a jump somewhere. Polster, McNamara, and I have Maciel coming back on my little sketch here, so... in the middle, and then Heel, Bo, and Veroni up top.
And did you mention Barrero?
That's just a projected starting lineup. So you could also have Barrero, Buck, Makoon, Esmir Barakovic, Nacho Heal, and Tahori Shradi coming off the bench or involved in some way. But Boateng, Kaptoum, Kizza, Renix, Jones, and Petrovic maybe, perhaps not here. I think with the World Cup coming up this year, a crazy busy soccer calendar between now and the end of the European season in May, that teams are going to have to make a lot of moves because a lot of guys are going to get hurt, quite honestly. You know, you're going to have a lot of overuse injuries. There's going to be a lot more games. It's a compressed time schedule. So it wouldn't surprise me, as much turnover as the Revs had in the roster last year, it wouldn't surprise me to see just as much this year or more, because I think clubs in Europe are going to be desperate for bodies by the time you get into that, whenever the last transfer window is.
And there's certainly pressure on Arena to put together a stronger team. There's definitely going to be a need for changes and a different set of mix of skill sets to produce a team that can play stronger than certainly this year and with more authority.
Well, do you feel like we touched on this in a prior episode, but do you feel as though they overreacted this year and tried to do too much to a team that was already pretty close? Or that they didn't do enough?
I think that's a good question. I would say for me, it felt like Arena was resting on his laurels, bringing in known people that have played for him in other clubs. And I think those moves, for the most part, didn't work out so well, either for injury or just having trouble mixing into the team. So I think there was some kind of disruption that occurred there with the signings that he did bring in. And I think it would be interesting, and it will be very interesting this year to see, because he won't be able to pull on the experience of players that he's already worked with for bringing in a number of new people that will be required for the roster. It could be that some of the rookies this year really step up and become starters, but I suspect he's going to need to bring in some more outside talent to raise the profile of the club this year.
Right. Well, that's sort of what I'm getting at. I wonder, what if they mostly left it alone and didn't do that much with the roster?
Eric, what are your thoughts on the roster, and should we make big changes or keep them small?
I think small changes are better. I the core is there. They're a player or two away, and maybe not even that. You know, Bruce in the last press conference talked about not doing the things that they did last year that won them games. Maybe it's a mentality thing. You know, it does feel like maybe they could use another enforcer. You know, when Jermaine Jones was here, that was, you know, ultimately that came back to bite him. But he filled that role in a way that made other players much more effective.
Yeah.
And Polster and McNamara are sort of that type of player, but not to the same degree.
Right. Yeah, I feel like the equivalent maybe for Jermaine Jones in terms of impact in the last season was Buchanan, who I think just opened up the field so much for other players because he was so good on the ball, so dangerous. And you combined him with Heal and Jones and Bai, it became difficult to defend the Revolution. And without Buchanan's replacement available because of injury, it was easier to shut down Heal, perhaps. Now you have the Heal brothers, which will be interesting.
Right.
And Barrero showed a little bit of flash there towards the end of the season with a tremendous strike in the last game of the season, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And if he comes back healthy, like you said, and Veroni comes back, you're right. That fine line that you talked about earlier could be achieved.
Yeah, I mean, let's for a second change what I said earlier about Petrovic maybe not being here and Jones. Let's assume Petrovic and Jones are back for the full season. Then what are they missing? I would say not very much. You know, Veroni's unproven. Nacho's unproven. But if Petrovic is back, you have Petrovic, Jones, Farrell, Kessler, and Bai in the back. That's as good a back five as you'll find. Polster and McNamara and, let's say, Maciel or Barrero in the middle. Okay, that's fine. And then Bo and Veroni and Heal. I don't know that you'd want to replace those guys. So, plus you have, you know, younger players coming off the bench, whether it's Barrero or Buck or Eshmir or Nacho. So I don't know that they need, you know, obviously if a great player becomes available, go ahead and bring them in. But I don't feel like they're that far away. So then that puts me back to the question of who's here in October of 2023 versus who gets signed for the 23-24 Premier League season.
Right.
Doesn't make it through the next MLS season because they get a better offer somewhere else. And that's the thing that I think Revs fans have to think about this offseason, or if you want to worry about something as a Revs fan, it's that the roster as currently constructed is actually pretty good, but there's nothing that says, as we saw, obviously everyone learned the hard way this year, that the roster you start spring training with is not the roster that you end the season with, and that can be a pretty painful process.
Right, especially in Major League Soccer, getting more visibility and good players finding opportunities back in Europe and perhaps other teams in North America and Mexico.
Right.
So maybe it comes back to what you were saying around Jermaine Jones, and what if there is a need for a new spark on the defensive end of the field? One or two players that can create a little bit more of a prevent defense than we've seen in the last 2 years, really, right? Because even in 2021, there were a number of goals given up. A lot of one-goal games, and the Revolution scoring a lot of points on the table by outscoring other teams. It wasn't around defensive masterpieces put forward. They're always a little sloppy in the back, or subject to counterpunches and giving up goals. And this year they paid for it more. So maybe there's something there, like you were saying, that needs to be looked at.
So we want to shift gears now a little bit and go back to something we touched on briefly earlier, which is the World Cup. And Noam, I realized something after watching. I was so motivated by, actually, I was watching the Austin FC Dallas game, and the crowd was so wild that it reminded me, as I said before, of the US-Italy game. And I went back and watched the highlights. And I watched the highlights of the US-Italy game. I watched them in German, because that was the first thing I found on YouTube. And then I watched them in Italian. I still haven't watched them in English. It's out there somewhere.
It's all about the emotion anyway, even if you can't understand it.
That's right. I understood just fine, even though I don't speak either of those languages. I think I realized something very important, even though that game was a very long time ago.
What was that? What did you realize, Herrick?
I realized that for 16 years, I thought the U.S. got completely hosed in that game. For those who don't know or who are younger or came to soccer later, it was a 1-1 tie. And the U.S. had two players red carded. Italy had one player red carded. So the game finished 10-9. And I thought the ref had a nightmare game. The U.S. had a goal disallowed. And as I watched the highlights, I thought, I have been holding a grudge against this referee and about this game for 16 years. And actually, the ref had a very good game. There was no VAR. He got all the big calls right. Everyone who was sent off deserved to get sent off. Every goal that was disallowed was deservedly and correctly disallowed. And obviously so. It wasn't even close. But I think the experience of the game was so intense and so painful that I never went back and looked at the video afterward. I just trusted my eyes and what I saw at the time.
Well, it's a good thing that Twitter wasn't that popular back then. Otherwise, you might have written some things you wanted to take back. But you could send the referee a note just congratulating him on a great game 16 years later. It is a good point. You know, there wasn't VAR back then. It's almost like a given now that every game, the referee is going to have to review plays because of missed calls. And there were some missed calls in other games, right, back in the day. But I think you're right in that game. And I do remember that play also. Unlike you, I wasn't sitting in the stadium. I was home on my couch and watching that game, and especially the winning goal that I thought was going in. And I was at first furious. I couldn't believe it was being called back. And then on the replay, it was pretty obvious that there was interference on it. And I think what was really tough about that play was that there was no need to interfere with it. I think McBride?
Yes, Beasley hit it, and McBride was about 3 yards offside. And well, why don't you describe it?
Yeah, I have to look at the replay myself, but it was an avoidable situation.
Yeah, McBride looked like, it was unclear to me, even from watching the replay, if he redirected the ball at all or basically allowed himself to be nutmegged, but which was enough of a distraction to the goalkeeper that the ball went in. It might have gone in if McBride had just left it alone and steered clear of the ball. But it all happened quickly. It's not like McBride could have done anything to get out of the way.
That's true. And he was nursing, a broken cheekbone or something from a red card play earlier in the game, so can't really fault
him. Well, he suffered major head trauma. I mean, he took a vicious elbow. I mean, there's blood everywhere. Now we would say he should have been in concussion protocol for probably the rest of the game, but it was just epic. I mean, at the right time.
I do remember watching an interview afterwards where I think teammates asked him to uncover his face so the referee could see it, but that McBride said he couldn't really feel anything because he's been bashed so many times in the face. It's kind of sad, but that he doesn't have a lot of feeling in that cheekbone. In fact, he might even have a metal plate there already or something.
Right.
And so he wasn't aware of what had happened to the extent that the other players could see what happened. So it's starting to bring back memories of some great players I loved watching. McBride, Dempsey, Beasley. What a great team.
Yeah, expectations were high. I mean, 2002 was such a great run. And then I think the hope was to build on that quarterfinal run in 2002 and really make some noise in 2006. And the team just totally fell flat. I mean, the difference between the 2002 U.S. men's national team and the 2006 team was almost like the 21 Revs and the 22 Revs, where expectations were elevated and it just didn't go the way that they had hoped and the fans had hoped. But what are your expectations? Oh, go ahead.
Well, there's one thing you haven't mentioned in relation to those two World Cups.
What's that?
Who was the manager?
Oh, right. Of course. So I can't believe I set all that up and then didn't.
We've seen Bruce Arena in his genius and perhaps getting a little overconfident, and maybe that's what happened this season, but I think he wants to set it right.
That's right. It's the common thread that links this all together. With that established, I think we wanted to touch on really two things with regard to the World Cup. And one was that really for the first time, there's more than one Revs player who may see a lot of minutes at the World Cup.
Let's see. Who is that now?
Well, let's see. We have Matt Turner.
Matt Turner. Likely starter.
For Canada, if he's healthy, you'll have Tejon Buchanan.
Absolutely. He could be a breakout star in the World Cup. I'm hoping he's healthy again.
I almost would expect it as long as he can get on the field. Adam Buksa for Poland. I'm not sure how many minutes he'll see, but certainly we wish him well.
He's coming back from injury also, I think.
So I think those are the big three. And, you know, in prior years, I think Clint Dempsey was probably the only Revs alumni to get meaningful minutes in the World Cup.
Right. You certainly had other Revs players that were close to making the roster. You had Steve Ralston, I remember, who scored against Mexico in qualifying, but I don't think he made the roster, right?
I don't think so. They might have taken him to one World Cup, but I I don't remember that. Taylor Twellman, for all his success in MLS, never really got big minutes with the national team. Jermaine Jones came after the World Cup, I believe, so that sort of doesn't count the same way, doesn't hit the same way. So I think that'll be exciting to watch some of these players that we saw in Foxborough for, in some cases, 2 years or 3 years. And then I thought we should just touch base and see where your expectations are for the U.S. team.
Oh, that's a difficult question. I'm not sure I'm prepared to answer that. Although the World Cup is really just around the corner.
So we have MLS Cup on November 5th, USA versus Wales on November 21st, versus England on November 25th, and versus Iran on November 29th.
So here's it for me. I know they've had a tough last couple of games at friendlies where they just looked abysmal. I think they had maybe one shot between two games. But I think the players were tired, focused on their club seasons, and so forth. I'm thinking something around similar to South Korea, the World Cup in 2002. I think the team could come together. They're starting to score. Some of them are starting to score. McKinney just scored the other day.
Mm-hmm. Pulisic. Reyna scored.
Pulisic is getting on the field and scored. And who's the striker?
Reyna.
Oh, Pepe. Pepe has been lighting it up for his team recently. So I think it's going to come together. I think all the teams in their group are beatable. So I think they're going to pull something out. I think the European teams have, in my mind, more challenges playing on different continents overall. And I think there could be something special coming.
I do too. And the low expectations and poor performance heading into the World Cup is probably, in my sense is that that's going to be good in tamping down expectations in a way that will help this team in the tournament. And I think they're going to win two games in the first round.
Yeah, Reyna's playing really well, and you have Sargent playing really well. I'm just looking at the roster, and a number of the players are lighting it up right now. So I think they're going to come together.
This is the most expensive roster we've ever brought to a World Cup. I know the roster's not final yet, but we probably know 2/3 of it with a high degree of certainty. It's the most prestige. It's the most decorated roster we've ever brought to the World Cup. And I think they will be up for this in a way that maybe they weren't up for the last couple of friendlies. And in a way that, that chant that I think originated at the Naval Academy and got picked up by the men's soccer community and the women's soccer community, I believe that we will win. I think this team does believe that they will win, and it wouldn't shock me if they won the World Cup. But I realize now that at this point, they're a long way from that. But the talent is pretty close to there. It's going to come down to that, again, that thing that sunk the Rev season, potentially, which was chemistry and self-belief.
Well, I'm not going to put them on the podium yet, but I think they'll make a lot of noise and set up an interesting run in 4 years from now when it comes back to the U.S.
All right, well, I can't wait to see that, and I can't wait to go to a game, and we're looking forward to it, and November is going to be a great month for soccer.
That it is, and it will make this very, very, very long off season a little bit more bearable.
So we covered a lot of ground tonight. We had a lot to talk about. We went a little longer than usual, but it's going to be a long off season, and we can't wait to do this again next season. Enjoy the off season, Noam. We'll talk soon.
Sounds good. Until then, take care. And thanks to everyone who listened in our first season. I really appreciate your taking time to check out this podcast. And we'll provide updates as we start season 2 a little bit later. Thank you again.
We thank you for listening to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast with Eric Warrista and Noam Shore.
We hope you enjoyed the show and can't wait to hear from you. The show was hosted, produced, and edited by Eric Warista and Noam Shore, and all opinions expressed are their own. Incidental music written, arranged, and performed by Eric Warista. Rev's crowd clips appear courtesy of the New England Revolution.